Mr. Volman's face contorted with the memory. Then something changed, and he looked strong and vital, like the man he must have been in his shop, a man who would not have slunk away from much of anything at all, and sped through his various future forms, a beaming fellow in a disordered bed, the morning after he and Anna would have consummated their marriage. She gleefully threw her head upon his chest and reached between his legs, eager to begin again. A father of twin girls who looked like paler, smaller Annas. A retired printer with bad knees, helped along a boardwalk by that same Anna, older now herself, but still beautiful. And as they went along, they spoke confidentially back and forth, somewhat habitually, not always agreeing, in a code that seemed to have developed between them about the twins, now mothers themselves. Mr. Volman turned to me, smiling in a pained but kindly way. "None of that ever was," he said, "and it never will be." Then he drew a deep breath and stepped into the burning train.
I could see Miss Traynor there, in what had been the dining car, her face clearly visible within the striped lavender wallpaper.
"Young Mr. Bristol desired me. Young Mr. Fellows and Mr. Delway desired me. Of an evening they would sit on the grass around me, and in their eyes burned the fiercest, kindest desire. It was all very... Then Mother would send Annie to come, and I wanted so much to hold a dear babe. You might, sir, you might, sire, do me a service, a great service. I know very well I do not look as pretty as I once... You might try, might at least try, do it here, do it now, won't you? Blow this fuck-cock-ass-ravaged train up, sir, with your going. If you please, it might free me. Don't know, can't say for sure, but have been so unhappy here so long."
"I will try," I said.
From within the train came the familiar yet always bone-chilling fire sound of the matter-like blooming phenomenon. The train began to vibrate, the hogs to squeal. I threw myself down on the good and blessed earth, soon to be mine no more. The train exploded. Seats rained down, hog parts rained down, menus rained down, luggage, newspapers, umbrellas, ladies' hats, men's shoes, cheap novels rained down. Rising to my knees, I saw that where the train had been was now only the dreaded iron fence. And there was nothing left for me to do but go, though the things of the world were strong with me still. Such as, for example, a gaggle of children trudging through a side-blown December flurry, a friendly match share beneath some collision-tilted streetlight, a frozen clock bird-visited within its high tower, cold water from a tin jug, toweling off one's clinging shirt post-June rain. Pearls, rags, buttons, rug tuft, beer froth. Someone's kind wishes for you, someone remembering to write, someone noticing that you are not at all at ease. A bloody roast, death red on a platter. A hedgetop underhand as you flee late to some chalk and wood fire smelling schoolhouse. Geese above, clover below. The sound of one's own breath when winded. The way a moistness in the eye will blur a field of stars. The sore place on the shoulder a resting toboggan makes. Writing one's beloved's name upon a frosted window with a gloved finger. Tying a shoe, tying a knot on a package. A mouth on yours. A hand on yours. The ending of the day. The beginning of the day. The feeling that there will always be a day ahead. Goodbye. I must now say goodbye to all of it. Loon call in the dark, calf cramp in the spring, neck rub in the parlor, milk sip at end of day. Some bandy-legged dog proudly backplows the grass to cover its modest shit. A cloud mass down valley breaks apart over the course of a brandy-deepened hour. Louvered blinds yield dusty beneath your dragging finger. And it is nearly noon, and you must decide. You have seen what you have seen, and it has wounded you, and it seems you have only one choice left. Blood-stained porcelain bowl wobbles face down on wood floor, orange peel not at all stirred by disbelieving last breath there amongst that fine summer dust layer. Fatal knife set down in passing panic on familiar wobbly banister, later dropped, thrown by mother, dear mother, heartsick into the slow-flowing chocolate-brown Potomac. None of it was real. Nothing was real. Everything was real, inconceivably real, infinitely dear. These and all things started as nothing, latent within a vast energy broth. But then we named them and loved them, and in this way brought them forth. And now must lose them. I send this out to you, dear friends, before I go, in this instantaneous thought burst from a place where time slows and then stops, and we may live forever in a single instant. Goodbye. Goodbye, good.
104.
Caroline and Matthew and Richard and I lay entangled there in our spot near the flagpole. My part to Caroline's mouth, her rear to Richard's part, Matthew's part to my rear, Caroline's part being shared by Matthew's mouth and my extended stroking middle finger.
Mr. Leonard Reedy.
Seems we'd missed the big excitement.
Mrs. Caroline Reedy.
Having been engaged in some excitement of our own.
Richard Crutcher.
But then, the noise of the many matter-light-blooming phenomena growing annoying...
We men became flaccid.
Making further excitement problematic.
Me and Richard and Mr. Reedy hacked up our pants, and Mrs. Reedy redid her skirt and blouse, and we rushed over along the fence line toward that other, lesser excitement.
Matthew Crutcher.
En route, we glimpsed Mr. Bevins.
Damn Nance.
On his knees by the fence, mumbling to himself.
Then the usual big to-do. Flash of light, clothes raining down.
No more Bevins.
105.
The sun was nearly up. Those of us who had survived that ghastly night huddled, conferred, went on brief sprinting expeditions, searching for survivors. We did not find Purdy, nor Johannes, nor Crawley. Did not find Pickler, Ella Blow, Verna Blow, Appleton, Scarry, Thorne. Midden was missing, as were Goncourt, Cup, Edwell, and Longstreet. Reverend Thomas, missing. Even Bevins and Volman, two of our most long-standing and faithful residents, gone. How we pitied these, so gullible, broken by the rantings of a mere boy, lost forever. Sweet fools.
Here we were we not? If not, who spoke? Who heard?
What a slaughter. And we'd only managed to survey a tiny fraction of the premises.
Soon day began to break in earnest, and here came the usual all-body weakness and the accompanying sense of diminishment, and we dashed off for our respective home places and situated ourselves squeamishly within our sick forms, eyes closed or averted, so as not to see what those foul things had become.
And as the sun came up, we prayed, each within ourselves, our usual prayer.
To still be here when the sun next set.
Mrs. Antoinette Boxer.
And discover, in those first moments of restored movement, that we had again been granted the great mother gift.
Time. More time.
106.
As always, at sun's rising, the two realms merged, and all that was true in ours became true in theirs. All the stones, trees, shrubs, hills, Valleys, streams, pondlets, marshes, patches of light and shade merged and were the same betwixt the two environs. And you could not have told one realm from the other. Much that was new and strange and unnerving had occurred this night. We three bachelors had watched it all unfold from on high, safe, separate, and free, the way we liked it. I enjoined my young charges that we must now beat a hasty retreat to our sick boxes and get ourselves within that which awaited us there.
Faugh.
We did not like entering those things.
At all.
But that was the price. We must abide, fully awake but inert, within those foul things that had once resembled, I had once been, us, and which we had loved so dearly, until such time as night again fell, at which time, shooting forth, we would be...
Free.
Free again.
Ourselves, truly.
All of blessed creation restored to us.
Everything again possible.
We three had never wed, nor truly loved, but once night fell again, and if we found ourselves still resident here, might strike the never.
For until we are ended, never may not be truly said.
And love may yet be ours.
107.
Just now took lantern out to Carol Crypt, Tom, to make sure all was well, and found young Lincoln's coffin slightly jutting out of the wall slot, and pushed it back in. Oh, that poor little fellow. Concluding his first ever lonely night here of many such lonely nights to come. A long, sad eternity of such nights. Could not help but think of our Philip, about same age as Prez's boy, who'll be racing about the yard and come in, just positively lit up from inside with joy of living, having been flirting over fence with a Mrs. Amy and Reba Leonard next door, his hair tousled, and grab a broom and in his overflow of happy spirits goose Mrs. Alberts the cook in her hindquarters, but when she turns to give him a wallop back holding a tremendous turnip and sees that glowing face, what can she do but drop said turnip into wash basin and grabbing him about neck smother him with kisses while I secretly hand her broom so as he scats away victorious she can give him a sort of avenging goose of her own, in his familiar play-worn trousers, and a good poke, too, as that lady's arms are like pot roasts. Oh, Lord, I cannot bear the thought of Philip lying still in such a place as this. And when that thought arises, must hum some scrap of tune energetically while praying, no, 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 take that cup away, Lord, let me go first before any of them I love, before Philip, Mary, Jack Jr., before dear Lydia. Only that's no good either, since when they reach their end, I will not be there to help them. Oh, either way, it is too unbearable. Oh, God, what a bind one is in down here, Tom. Dear friend Tom, I long for sleep. I await your arrival and hope these sad and morbid thoughts will soon fade away soon with the happy sight of our dear friend rising, the sun.
108.
I rode along in that gentleman upon our little horse. Through those quiet streets, and I was not unhappy, though he was. He had neglected his wife by this night's indulgence, he felt, and they had another little sick boy at home, who might also succumb. Though he was better today, he might yet succumb. Anything could happen, as he now knew. He had forgotten. He had somewhat forgotten about the other boy. Tad. Dear little Tad. The gentleman had much on his mind. He did not wish to live. Not really. It was just now too hard. There was so much to do. He was not doing it well, and if done poorly, all would go to ruin. Perhaps in time, he told himself, it would get better and might even be good again. He did not really believe it. It was hard. Hard for him. Hard for me to be in there. I resolved, nevertheless, to stay. It was getting on near morning. Normally during the day we took our rest. We're drawn back to our shells and must rest in there. Tonight, I did not feel that draw. But I was sleepy. I dozed and slipped through him into his horse, who was, I felt at that moment, pure patience, head to hoof, and fond of the man. Never before had I felt oats to be such a positive thing in the world, or so craved a certain blue blanket. And then I roused myself and sat up straight and fully rejoined the gentleman. And we rode forward into the night, past the sleeping houses of our countrymen.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders, featuring, in order of their appearance, Nick Offerman as Hans Vollmann, David Sedaris as Roger Bevins III, Carrie Brownstein as Isabel Perkins, George Saunders as the Reverend Everly Thomas, Miranda July as Mrs. Elizabeth Crawford, Lena Dunham as Elise Traynor, Ben Stiller as Jack Manders, Julianne Moore as Jane Ellis, Susan Sarandon as Mrs. Abigail Blass, Bradley Whitford as Lieutenant Cecil Stone, Bill Hader as Eddie Barron, Megan Mullally as Betsy Barron, Rainn Wilson as Percival Dash Collier, Jeff Tweedy as Captain William Prince, Kat Dennings as Miss Tamara Doolittle, Jeffrey Tambor as Professor Edmund Bloomer, Mike O'Brien as Lawrence T. DeCroy, Keegan-Michael Key as Elson Farwell, Don Cheadle as Thomas Havens, and Patrick Wilson as Stanley Professor Lippert, with Kirby Hayborn as Willie Lincoln, Mary Carr as Mrs. Rose Milland, and Cassandra Campbell as your narrator. Additional voices by Max Adler, McLeod Andrews, Sean Baker, Avita Basharod, Amanda Beasley, Patrick Billard, Jane Billings, Aaron Blank, Paul Bamer, Mark Bramhall, Hugo Bresson, Scott Brick, Nancy Bruns, Danny Campbell, Matt Cartsonis, Mark Cashman, Mike Chamberlain, Jeff Cohen, Michael Crouch, Amanda DiCerno, Phil David, Mark Deakins, Robertson Dean, Charles de Montebello, Benjamin Dreyer, Noah Eager, Justine Eyre, Kimberly Farr, Liz Farrell, Dr. Andrew Fiedler, Barbara Fillon, Ed Franco, Brad Garrett, Michael Gentile, Ryan Gazelle, Kelly Gilday, Michael Goldsmith, Russ Gorsline, Ben Greenberg, Kaleo Griffith, Christopher Grove, Cesar Guadamuse, Robert Guzman, David Hawsey, Grant Heyer, Dominic Hoffman, J.T. Holcomb, Maggie Holcomb, Mark Holcomb, Sarah Holcomb, Tyler Holcomb, Lincoln Hoppe, Stephen Hoy, Tony Hutz, Andy Hughes, Arthur G. Insana, Gildart Jackson, Lane Jansen, Susan Camel, Mika Kasuga, Simon Katz, Jeff Kenyon, Scott Kolwitz, Greg Cuby, Anne-Marie Lee, John Lee, Joe Lindblom, Sherry Lindblom, Adam Lissagor, Eric Lovis, Rebecca Lohman, Colonel Kevin Madden, Bruce Mann, Lee Marchant, Eric Martin, John H. Mayer, Jonathan McLean, Catherine McEwen, Caitlin McKenna, David McLaughlin, Stephen Mendel, Peter Mendelson, Robin Miles, Arthur Morey, Oliver Mundy, Mike Murray, Dan Musselman, Mike Musselman, Kayla Myers, Esther Newberg, Samuel Nicholson, Adenrele Ojo, Pat Pacino, Dara Parik, Thomas Perry, David Fethian, Ray Porter, Louise Quayle, Bob Quinto, Lorna Raver, Hilary Redman, Holiday Reinhorn, Jared Robbins, Brent Rogers, Richard Romaniello, Bill Rude, Michael Rotondo, Jennifer Rubens, Tom Russell, Fred Sanders, Elena Saunders, Caitlin Saunders, George Saunders Sr., Joan Saunders, Paula Saunders, Joe Scalora, Robin Schiff, Heather Scott, Ted Scott, Rob Shapiro, Phil Stamper Halpin, Pat Stango, Simon Tipaz, Kevin Thompson, Deborah Treisman, Bonnie Turpin, Molly Turpin, Sam Tweedy, Spencer Tweedy, Elena Wagner, Bob Walter, Andy Ward, Ben Waters, Jeff Weber, Nikki Weinstock, David Weller, Julia Whalen, Tyler Whitlatch, Henry Williams, Greg Wilson, Dan Warren, Richard Wild, and Dan Zitt. For more extensive information, including a full list of characters, please visit www.penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Lincoln in the Bardo. This program was directed by Kelly Gilday and produced by Kelly Gilday and George Saunders. Editing, mixing, and mastering by Ted and Heather Scott of 50 Nugget Wash Productions. Tamale Never Knows, written and recorded by Jeff Tweedy, courtesy of DBPM Records. Text copyright 2017 by George Saunders. Production copyright 2017 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.